Hi, this is Bobby Watson, and you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Keith Brown Eel. Today, host Melvin Merritt talks with Beth Sarver and Molly Technor of Truman Matters KC, a new effort of Truman Medical Center and Mid-America Regional Council. Find out how this new organization will help the KC area become a trauma-informed community. Later in the show, the 420 drug wars news and calendar of events. Now here's Beth, Molly, and Melvin. Good morning. Welcome to a live edition of Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. Along in the studio with me, as it was mentioned, I have Miss Beth Sarver and Molly Technor. And I would like to welcome them at this time. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
Glad you can be a part of this broadcast. Could you go in and tell us a little bit about your organization as it relates to trauma?
Sure. Trauma Matters KC was developed out of a larger group of representatives from the community to create a culture of trauma-informed care in the community. We understand how important trauma is impacting our youth and our community, and so we want everyone to know about it. We developed a committee that meets on a monthly basis, and our goal and hope is that everyone in the community, whether you're a mental health provider or a radio announcer or a physician in a hospital, that you understand how community trauma impacts everybody. And so we meet on a monthly basis, and this includes mental health providers, insurance people, social workers, doctors, concerned citizens. Armed Forces providers have been a part of our community forum, education, the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, and health foundations. And our goal is really just to get the word out on how trauma impacts everybody.
Thanks, Molly. And that was Molly Technor. And I'm going to direct my question to Ms. Beth Sarver. And could you tell us a little bit some of the definitions or the areas of trauma? Is it necessarily or is it always head injuries?
No, and when I define trauma, I basically say it's any experience that you have that overwhelms your capacity to cope. So certainly head trauma is trauma, but you know, Our communities are experiencing all kinds of violence, domestic violence, community violence, bullying, you know, not having enough food to eat, being neglected, having parents that work all the time, and you're left to kind of raise yourself and find yourself in all kinds of experiences that can be quite traumatizing. Trauma is a very broad, you know, category of experience, and a part of our mission is to break that down so that it's more understandable, so that we can begin to see that really most of our population has experienced trauma, and to inform them about the practices, the sensitive practices that we can all utilize to help our young people specifically, but all people to get through their trauma, to develop resiliency and coping skills that will help them to move forward and thrive in this world.
That leads me to my next question, is how did it get you into this particular field and what drove you to it?
Well, I'm an arts educator and kind of a non-traditional arts educator. I started working in juvenile detention centers years ago through the Sentence to the Arts program, so I've been drawn to working with quote-unquote at-risk populations mm-hmm. for years. And I was networking with the community support division of the KCPD and was wanting to reach out to other organizations to build community with other people who were action-oriented and really trying to do something around, you know, youth and at-risk youth in our
city. So it was nothing personal, you know?
Well, I mean, it was personal because, you know, I have this deep calling within me that I have had since I was a child to be a part of the solution, and working with marginalized populations has been an area where I felt the greatest amount of fulfillment. And so I found myself in the meeting and was like, wow, these people are really they're doing something, and they're not just having meetings to have meetings to have meetings about more meetings.
Tell me about meetings.
So their action, it's an action-oriented group, and it's one that I felt like I could contribute something that I brought a unique perspective, and you know, I felt honored to be at a table with so many different types of people. So.
That's great. What about you, Molly?
I've been in the mental health field for approximately almost 20 years now, and when I graduated from college, I realized that I wanted to do something more with helping people, specifically the youth. And I think working with youth in communities like Kansas City, you have there's such a hope for, despite the fact that it might come from families or a community that's ridden with violence, and, you know, like Beth said, where there might be not a primary caregiver at home to watch them and make sure that they're going to school and really hope for success, but you see one youth that is able to overcome the violence in, at home, in the community, the bullying at school, and that success, and come out and go to college or do whatever they want to do with their life and succeed in that way. And so that's what kind of brought me to the mental health field, and I've been working at Truman for about 7 years in the mental health outpatient clinic with youth and families to hopefully make a difference, to get the word out there. I'm involved in a lot of other committees, and this is one of my passions, the trauma-informed community. And to get the word out there to help everybody understand that this isn't just a mental health issue, this isn't just a medical issue, this is a community issue, and this is a forum where we can make a difference.
Beth alluded to a point when she mentioned about a child being left at home. And we know that so many families have to go to work. And so you mentioned about that could be a trauma, you know, for a child to be left at home. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I was a latchkey kid, you know, but I had brothers around and I had, you know, a community that I was, you know, safe, quote unquote, in. But I experienced trauma at that time by finding myself in other people's apartments that I shouldn't have been in.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I experienced a number of incidents where I was sexually abused.
Okay.
In a safe world, you know, not in an area that had high violent crime rates. And
was that because that your parents dropped you off at some place?
No, it's because they, you know, gave me a key and told me to go home after school and do my homework, and I made other choices. But, you know, I think that in our city we have, you know, young people who, and that was, you know, back in the 80s, and now we have a whole other world of technology and information that our kids have access to that give them a sense of what else is possible. So I think our kids are going out and about more. They're unsupervised more, even from back in the day. And maybe that's just my perception, but I know that there's a lot of opportunity to experience things and not have adults around to help you unpack it and understand it, and that you can be violated. You can be beaten up. You can be raped. You can be witness to things that you don't know how to, you know, to make sense of. And so all of those can be small experiences that don't traumatize for one person, but the next person, depending on what their coping skills are and what their life has been like prior to that, could really begin to compound and traumatize them and change their perspective on life and how safe they might feel going to school or any number of things.
Either one of you can answer this question. What type of warning signs, if a child has been traumatized by something like what Beth was mentioning, and either one of you can answer that question, what are some of the warning signs?
Well, I think if you're a parent or you're a teacher or you're around children, some of the symptomology that you'll see, even at a really young age, is they withdraw. They withdraw from people. You know, high levels of anxiety. Oftentimes, the conception of a youth who has been traumatized, it comes out in behavior issues. It'll come out in being potentially violent, being disrespectful and defiant. And our goal is to help people understand that that is potentially because of a traumatizing situation that they've been in or are currently in or have experienced. Oftentimes it leads to somewhat of a depression. or mood issues. They can't regulate their mood very well, as far as sometimes they get really angry really quickly and they don't really know why. Oftentimes people who have been traumatized will have specific issues that trigger them. And what I mean trigger is that something that generally would not make them irritable or make them angry wouldn't make them angry because it's related to how they were traumatized or that situation that led to that trauma. So I think we need to be cognizant. And the one thing that this community is really working on, this trauma and from KC Matters, is that to understand that all of these are symptoms of trauma and could potentially be. So anyone that walks in your door, specifically a youth when they walk into school or a situation like that, is that you need to think about where they're coming from, and that it doesn't necessarily mean they're being defiant just to be defiant. Mm-hmm. They could
there's
have
a root to it, that.
There's a root cause to that.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Could you give us a case in point of anyone mm-hmm. that you may have actually in terms of a family?
We have a few families, but specifically I'm thinking of one family where there's intergenerational trauma. What I mean by that is their family has lived in this community and they have been victims of domestic violence and abuse and gang violence on them specifically. They've witnessed and been part of significant murders in the community, specifically within their own family, and lost members of their family. And that went on from generation to generation. And so the youth that we serve in this family are they've grown up in this culture. And so to them, in a way, it was just like, this is my life. Mm-hmm. And this is just how my life goes on every day. But not even realizing that what they're experiencing has been compounded trauma over a significant number of years. Mm-hmm. Some of them are younger, some are a little bit older in their teens. We were serving this family, and they're involved in all of our outpatient mental health.
So that's what you were talking about, right, with the ripple effect.
Right. And it's just specifically some of the teenagers in this family, they've been part of gang violence, and they've witnessed, a close family member die right in front of them, and they've witnessed their mother being, or parents or a family member being, part of domestic violence. And so they themselves have kind of melded into that culture. And now it's starting to bleed out. So they're not going to school. They've dropped out of school. It's impacting their relationships with other people. So their friendships have sort of veered off, and their ability to perform well in school when they want to go to school, it's impacting how they treat other people in terms of a violent way. So our goal with working with this specific family is to work on not just work on that child, because if you're working on just that one child, you're not addressing where the trauma is coming from. So working with that family system and that family culture, and then working on the community, so we're getting people in there just to really address that, because if you don't change that, then you're not going to work with the child. There's really going to be no work done, if that makes sense.
Just in case anybody, did you want to say anything?
Well, one of the things that I think is so powerful is that trauma changes the physiology of the brain. Mm-hmm. So it changes the way the brain actually grows over time. Mm. And so it's not, these behaviors that we see in our community with our young people and our schools, it's not just bad behavior. Mm-hmm. It's like these are adaptive strategies that have come over time. These young people working with the best understanding that they have, mm-hmm. seeing what's working and what they have accessible to them in their community and in their family, to know how to behave and how to function, And so, when you look at the brain scans of children who have been repeatedly and systematically and intergenerationally traumatized, it's a different brain. And not that they can't be resilient. That's what's so amazing, is that people who have experienced excruciating trauma have gone on to have PhDs and change,
their world.
So it's like we can, I am so hopeful. And so, and that's what our message is it's, we need to be aware, we need to understand triggers, we need to understand that there is hope, that there are best practices, sensitive practices, and treating bad kids like bad kids is just replicating it. We need to seek understanding.
It's reinforcing the trauma.
Yeah. Exactly, and re-traumatizing them and pushing those hardwired ideas in their brain even deeper. But those things can be pulled apart, but it takes time and a lot of love and compassion and time and
understanding.
And understanding.
So what if someone that's listening to us, which I know they are, it might be interested in getting in contact with you? What information could you give them in terms of getting in contact with
Definitely.
You?
Definitely. I think our committee, Trauma Matters KC, meets on the second Monday of every month from 2 to 3:30 at the Mid-American Regional Council, otherwise known as MARC, and that's at 600 Broadway. And so it's an open forum. We invite anybody who has a passion or a drive and wants to get involved in this community effort. So that's always an option. They can definitely email or contact myself, Molly Ticknor. My email address is molly.rush@tmcmed.org. And then Beth, I'm not sure if they can always contact Beth as well and get involved.
Yeah, and our meeting is actually today for anybody that's wanting to come by. But they can contact me at hopeknows.org@gmail.com.
Okay. Can you repeat that? Ticknor?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get used to this now.
My email address is molly.rush@tmcmed.org. And again, we meet at the second Monday of every month from 2 to 3:30 at the Mid-American Regional Council at 600 Broadway.
What about a phone number?
Oh, they can also reach me at 816-404-2700 to get any more information about what we're doing in this effort.
That's great. Just right back to some of the questions that I wanted to ask. You have on the paper that we were talking about a person that has been traumatized by whatever, and they want to find a place of safety, because they don't feel safe, like, for instance, of what you shared about getting back into a place where they can really feel safe and they don't feel safe. What would you do? How would you direct that family or that person or that individual?
I would say that if you can find someone in your community, in your family, a close family member, to consult with them and talk with them about what's going on. Truman Medical Center Behavioral Health is a community mental health agency. It's one of four in Jackson County. We serve this population within this community right here. And our address is 300 West 19th Terrace, right in the Crossroads District. We're a community mental health agency that can come in and try to help and figure out what's going on with the youth in our community. We're open Monday through Friday. We do walk-ins, which means that if you have a concern of a parent or a guardian of a youth, that you can bring them in anytime Monday through Friday from 9 until noon, and we will see you and do a quick assessment by one of our mental health counselors, and then figure out what we can do to help. And that's not just for the youth, that's for the families, and getting into the schools and trying to educate the youth community in terms of whether that's a teacher, the principals, coaches, parents, siblings, and so there's a lot of services that we can offer in that aspect.
So there is more support groups that
are
around.
There are definitely more supports in the community, and that's the other goal of our Trauma Matters KC, is to really educate what is out there. Like Beth was saying, there are a lot of evidence-based practices and sensitive practices that we can utilize that we have in our toolbox to help treat and help educate the families and the youth who've had severe traumatic events in their life. And so there's a lot of people trained in the community that can assist that. And I know one of the things that a lot of people say is, well, we know it's out there, but we don't know how to access it. So we're working with the schools in the area, and we're working with the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. And, Beth has been out there working her magic, getting everybody involved. And so there's ways to access these services. And hopefully soon we'll get a website up and running and be able to get the word out there using the technology so that people know how to access these services so they can get their youth assistance.
That leads me to this next question, is how long have you been in existence?
As long as Trauma Matters KC?
Mm-hmm.
The committee itself has been in existence since January 2012. And it was kind of a grassroots. There was probably four or five of us mental health professionals and community members sitting around a table. It came about after we did a huge forum in the community, and we had about 150 people at this forum. And one of the things that kept coming back from our community members, a lot of people that I spoke of earlier, was how much trauma is impacting everything. Mm-hmm. That it's not, you know, everyone has concerns, but all the when we did our this huge needs assessment in the community, everything came back to trauma. You know, I need help on managing the behaviors of my child, but it's always coming back to trauma. We did a survey where we surveyed providers and community members and clients and parents and youth, and it just kept coming back to trauma. And so one of the things that we started to do was researching trauma-informed care and researching how we can best educate and promote resiliency. And so we created this committee, and we're a year later, and I think we've done some amazing work. We've had national councils and national people come into our community and do presentations. We're going to keep doing that to educate people, to get everybody on board. And I think we've done some amazing work. Like I said, we started about five or six people on a table, and now on an average, on a monthly basis, we get probably 20 to 25 people that keep coming, and every month we have someone new. We recently, the last meeting that we had members of the armed forces attend our table, and it was specifically gentlemen who serve the psychological needs of the families when either the armed forces members are deployed or coming back. And so that was exciting to kind of breach that barrier that we've been overcoming to have them around our table.
Well, let me say this. This has been a great broadcast, and I thank you for coming out and being my guest. And I'm just encouraging you to just keep on doing what you're doing, because it sounds real great. And real quickly, can you give us a little information about your contact information, and then we'll close it out?
Sure. My name is Beth Sarver. You can email me at hopeknows, that's hopeknows.org. @gmail.com, and my number is 913-563-8827.
And I'm Molly Ticknor. You can email me at molly.rush, that's R-U-S-H, at tmcmed.org, that's tmcmed.org, and you can contact me at 816-404-2700.
Coming up next is 420 Drug War News with Carrie Nelson.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Following courtesy CNN.
There was euphoria the moment pot became legal in Washington State. But 3,000 miles away in Washington, D.C., the Justice Department and the White House are reviewing how the federal government should respond. At the moment, they're sticking to this statement from the U.S. Attorney in Seattle, Washington, who would prosecute violations there. Regardless of the state law, growing, selling, or processing any amount of marijuana remains illegal under federal law. The department's responsibility to enforce the Controlled Substances Act remains unchanged. But several former DOJ officials who spoke to CNN said that likely won't be the end of it. Former Attorney General under President George W. Bush, Alberto Gonzalez, laid out the options facing Eric Holder and the Justice Department. Option one, lock the users up.
Go into Washington State and arrest and prosecute those in possession of marijuana, and then wait for the defendant to say, well, wait a minute, you know, I've got a state law here that says this is not lawful. And at that point, the department can raise the issue of preemption and say, well, the federal government, federal laws preempt state law in this regard.
Option two, fight it out in the courts.
Sue the state of Washington and the state of Colorado. Take them to court and say just say outright that in this field the federal government has preempted and that the law has to fall.
Option three, cut off federal money to law enforcement.
You simply start withholding federal grants to the state because of the fact that they're not helping the state enforce federal laws.
Gonzalez didn't mention option four, do nothing. Listen to former federal prosecutor Mark Osler.
I think they should stand back. I think that what the best course of action here is to employ prosecutorial discretion at that macro level and let the states do what they will.
And just why would the Obama administration balk at enforcing federal laws that have been on the books for decades? There's the political consideration.
Here you've got two states that went for President Obama. Colorado is, in fact, a swing state. The people of those states have spoken. And for the federal government now to come in and say, we want to quash your popular mandate, there are political risks to doing that.
And there's also some precedent from medical marijuana, which is already legal in 18 states and the District of Columbia.
Folks, have you noticed over the years how much CNN and NBC, CBS, ABC, and even Fox are starting to sound a bit like us here on the Drug Truth Network? Well, I say it's about damn time. How about you? Please check out all our shows on our website. You need to do your part. Let's end this madness. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
This is the Jaws of Justice radio calendar of April 8, 2013. The Kansas Coalition Against the Death Penalty joins with a number of KU campus groups to present a lecture by Kirk Bloodsworth, author of Innocence, Matters of Innocence. That's Matters of Innocence. Kirk, a former Marine, was sentenced to death in Baltimore County, Maryland, for the 1985 rape and murder of a 9-year-old Don Hamilton, and was exonerated by DNA evidence in 1993. He will be speaking on Monday, April 15, 2013, at the Big 12 Room, the Kansas Union, 1301 Jayhawk Boulevard, Lawrence, Kansas. For information on this and other public events with Kirk, check out the Kansas Coalition Against the Death Penalty website, www.ksabolition.org. The Missouri Medicaid Coalition is hosting a Medicaid expansion lobby today, Tuesday, April 16th. There will be a bus leaving from the Teamsters Union, 4501 Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri, at 7:30 a.m. and another from Independence Center, 18801 East 39th Street, Independence, Missouri, at 8:30 a.m. on the 16th. Reserve your spot on the bus at www.MoMedicaidCoalition.org/RSVP. Contact Kevin for more information at KevinStamps@MoMedicaidCoalition.org. My name is Keith Brownhill. You can find these announcements and more on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page and at KKFI webpage, kkfi.org.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. If you have comments or questions, check out the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, www.kkfi.org. You can join the Jaws of Justice Radio group by emailing us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. My name is Jeff Humfeld. We thank our engineer, Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Listen in tomorrow at 9 a.m. for Law and Disorder, author and historian Rashid Khalidi on his book, Brokers of Deceit, How the U.S. Has Undermined Peace in the Middle East, and attorney Larry Hildes about suing the U.S. military for spying on peace activists. Tune in Wednesday at 9 a.m. for Alternative Radio, featuring former Congressman Dennis Kucinich, speaking on war and peace. Up next is Counterspin, followed at 10 o'clock by Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m.